What is your calling? How did you figure this out? For students, what experiences or tools or skills are most helpful in fostering wise discernment? Today, we welcome Denise Terry, Director of the Center for Career Connections at Grace College on the shores of Winona Lake in northern Indiana. We'll learn a little about Denise's own career journey, get her take on what makes work purposeful, and explore why learning to pivot in your career is so important, especially during a pandemic. Welcome to the Purposeful Work Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dick. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U, an online career assessment system that uses predictive science to help you find joy, meaning, and purpose in your career. For more information and to join, go to pathwayu.com. That's pathway, then the letter u.com. We welcome Denise Terry to this episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast. Denise is a Grace College alum with a counseling background, but started her career working in human resources, eventually serving as vice president of HR for Cardinal Services in Indiana. Ultimately, Denise answered a calling to return to her alma mater and has served as the director of the Center for Career Connections at Grace since 2011. Welcome to the podcast, Denise.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
First of all, I'm curious about your own career path. What led you to graduate with a counseling degree, but then transition immediately into HR?
Well, I love to share this story because actually when I teach our students in our first year experience, I walk them through a little bit of my career journey because I think it helps illuminate a bit of the zigzag path that can occur. For me, when I came to Grace, I thought I was going to be a teacher. And I took that introductory teaching class that they offer and quickly realized I was in the wrong place. And I think what I recognized was what had drawn me to the idea of teaching was having a teacher who inspired me, who helped me see that, you know, this idea of a fixed mindset or a growth mindset, like you can actually move the needle on things. And I felt like he really made a difference in my life, and I wanted to be able to do that for other people. So I assumed that meant I should be a teacher. And then when I realized what was involved in being a teacher in terms of all the behind the scenes work that goes into that, and lesson planning and bulletin boards and I don't know, all the things that just didn't quite connect with what I thought I would be skilled at doing, I shifted gears. And so I was in an introductory psychology class. It was a core class required. And I immediately felt like I was at home. You know, like this is stuff I love to think about. These are books I love reading. I love to think about the way people's minds work and relationships and how do we journey with people. And so I felt like I'd finally found kind of where I fit. And so then began taking courses in counseling. Loved those as well. But all of the while, sort of the back of my mind, was thinking, I don't think I really want to be a professional counselor. First of all, someone paying me to talk to them about their problems seemed a little odd. I'll talk to you for free. The pressure that kind of gets added in there when someone's paying you to talk just seemed weird to me. But and I didn't know if I could picture myself doing sort of the same thing day in and day out. So meeting with people and then meeting with people and writing down notes and meeting with people. Like I had a very narrow view of what counseling would look like. And so I really couldn't picture getting licensed and doing that, but I loved what I was learning. So I felt like I needed to stay faithful to kind of how God had wired me and where my interests were and where I felt like I was gifted, which really was in this realm of understanding people and the way we engage each other. And so I pursued that path, undergrad counseling. And then, of course, I get my master's in counseling, which, again, seems weird when you never want to be a professional counselor. So, but it felt like I needed that credential to open doors towards work that would utilize that background. So for me, that didn't become clear until after college. And I started working for a bank as a bank teller, which I know has nothing to do with counseling, but it actually opened my eyes to the idea that the world of business needs people with good people skills, which sounds pretty obvious, but it hadn't really occurred to me in college. And so that gave me the idea that maybe there's something in the world of business where my skills could be could be utilized. And that led me to a temp agency helping people get placed into jobs. And I thought, wow, what about human resources? That could be a good fit for me. Walked down that path and started into some entry-level work at Cardinal Services in HR, that then I was able to be promoted up to the VP of HR there. And I tell students, if you would have asked me as a freshman, you know, or told me someday you're going to be the vice president of HR, I would have said, what's HR? I don't think I would have even known what that was, nor would have I assumed a counseling degree would have led to it. Counseling degree, went into HR. And then really, when I think about that trajectory, being able to work with students at Grace, having the lens of a human resources professional, what are employers looking for? What are the preparation pieces that you need to get ready for a career? And then that counseling piece, kind of helping students kind of talk them off the ledge of walking towards adulthood, you know, and the fears that they have, seemed like a really great fit for my background. And again, it's just not something you can look forward and sort of envision happening. It's those pieces begin to add up as you walk path. So yeah,
that's kind of where I love that level of self-awareness of kind of being able to articulate what you really enjoy and what captures your interests, but then also discern what kinds of things don't seem to fit, and then let that whole picture kind of influence the choices that you made going forward. And you describe this kind of iterative process that really highlights your ability to adapt and to see kind of new opportunities and evaluate each one, maybe ones that you didn't necessarily expect based on how well it fit. And obviously over time, things work out really well to the point where you were VP of HR at a company. How did things unfold from there? Because you obviously, there was a point in time where you shifted from your HR role back to your alma mater.
Right. So I did that for 9 years and had the privilege of being able to stay home with my son when he was born. Took a window of time to be in that position as a mom, being home. And then as he got older, got into elementary school, I thought, well, maybe it'd be a good time to start thinking about work again. Not that I wasn't working, of course, but took opportunity to do some part-time things. And one of those was a role as a marketing coordinator, kind of an admin assistant for a financial planner in town. And then did some HR consulting and some training on like the MBTI for different organizations, and just did some HR consulting work. And I actually did a consulting job for Grace, where I worked with their HR department on a project looking at job descriptions. And I always kind of pictured myself, this sounds weird, but somewhere along the way, I thought, someday I'm going to be back at Grace. And I just didn't know what capacity that would be. Like, what would that even look like? I had no aspirations to get my doctorate and be a faculty, full-time faculty. So I didn't know what that would be. And I honestly didn't really want to go back into HR. So I don't know what I was actually thinking. But when this job came open, a friend who worked here called me and said, hey, I think you'd be a good fit for this. And this was my first kind of walk back toward full-time work. And I thought, wow, am I really ready to go back full-time? And when I heard the job, I just felt like I needed to explore it. And when I did, I just thought, wow, this couldn't be a better fit. So it felt like God just said, yeah, here's all the worlds colliding. And you get the privilege now of walking and journeying with college students, which is super fun.
That's amazing. And the rest is history.
There you go. Yeah.
you describe career development and career discernment as a developmental process. So walk me through this. If I'm starting out as a new student in my first year at Grace College, what can I expect in terms of what the college and your office in particular will provide that will help me figure things out on this journey?
Yeah, so I tell students it is a developmental journey. I kind of take them back and say, remember, you were in college in school your whole life, right? You've been in this learning mindset and you started out kind of forming your identity as a elementary, middle school, high school student. Well, now they start in this chapter of college where that developmental shift happens. And now they're looking at their lives with this sense of independence. Now I have choices to make. Now I'm asking the questions, what do I enjoy? What makes me tick? What do I want to pursue? And while there was that sort of umbrella and protection of your family and home up until this point, now it's a little bit of a sense of now it's kind of up to me to think about these things. And so it's a big shift for students. So they're in that window now where they're, I think this chapter of college is like, they're kind of like a sponge, right? They're learning, they're taking things in, they're being shaped by the people around them, their peers, their faculty, their classes. And I think their calling is, as a student, is to be in a posture of like receiving and being shaped by those things. And so kind of being in that mindset that that's what they're being asked to do. They're not being asked to make all the decisions about their future yet. They're being asked to be in this posture of listening and learning and being influenced, right? And then there's a really critical chapter to this journey, which is the chapter after college, where they're testing the waters on careers. They're really fine-tuning that alignment with where their best fit is. So we want students to be thinking about this as a developmental journey and to not feel like they have to run ahead to the end until they're closer to the next chapter. But some of the things that we do, our office is really, the way I like to describe it is that we're kind of paralleling that academic journey. So while they're in class and they're kind of engaging in those academic endeavors and they're learning things, we're kind of walking alongside them, helping them think about what are those applications for what they're learning to either the real world or experiences that they can be gaining along the way that kind of supplement what they're learning, but enhance what they're learning. So as an office, our objective is to kind of help round out that education, that whole person development. So of course it's things like, you know, exploration activities, self-reflection, those discovery opportunities like job shadowing and internships and assessments that they'll take, either career assessments, personality, strengths, those kinds of things. Just building those skills and those network connections that they'll gain through internships and through, you know, mock interviews and training and professional development, those kinds of things. All those tangible pieces like resumes and interview prep. How are you going to dress for success for the job? These are those extras that kind of come alongside the classwork so that they're ready when they have to interview for an internship or they're ready to interview for a job. And they feel like they've gained kind of this broader sense of where this is all headed. So yeah, we do some fun things. We do some fun events. I love our mock interview event. It's kind of like a speed dating style mock interview where we get a bunch of employers in the room and they sit down and they do a brief interview and they get instant feedback and then they move on to the next. And by the end, they've interviewed maybe six different times and they feel like they've really improved and made those adjustments. So it's helping them feel ready and confident in that launch.
That does sound like fun. It also sounds very thorough. And I appreciate how, you know, you sort of prepare students to expect that the process will continue after they graduate. You know, they don't have to have it all figured out as they walk across the stage and get their diploma. That seems really important. You mentioned assessment as one of the things that your office provides. What role does assessment play in the process?
So we see assessments as just helpful lenses, you know, for students to begin envisioning those environments where they're going to thrive. So assessments are really just a wonderful tool to help them with that alignment idea. So, you know, what are my gifts and strengths? What are my talents? Who am I? You know, what's answering some of that question? And helping them get clarity on that, I think assessments are really good for that purpose. It gives them like descriptive language that adds a little more depth to their understanding of their personality or their interests, their values, those strengths that they have. And I think sometimes it provides a bit of a confirmation, sort of that deep yes internally to those things that are descriptive of who they are. It's like, ah, yes, that's me. And I want to be able to use that in my life. I want to be able to take advantage of that going forward. I really caution them to realize that these are not magical tools. You know, like once you take a career assessment, there's no magic that happens that spits out your best ideal career, and then you're good to go. I know we would all like it to be that way. And actually students feel a lot of hope in that this is going to be the answer to the hard question, you know, But to me, what it does is it narrows things a bit, but it also broadens things so that they realize there's so many more opportunities where they will thrive than they ever imagined. And I love that for them, because I think they're afraid that A, when they choose a major, or B, if they choose a career path, they've just eliminated everything that might also be of interest to them. I'm like, of course not. That's not the case. So these tools really kind of help them see the bigger picture. And again, add that wonderful vocabulary that they can have to help expand their sense of who they are and even articulate that in an interview.
I love that. Yeah, I know that impulse of wanting to take some kind of test that will tell me what I should do with my life. And what you describe is, you know, generating information that can that can be received as affirming, can give you language to describe yourself, and also alert yourself to the reality that for most of us, there are probably multiple right answers to that question of what, you know, what we should do with our lives. I appreciate that. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. When I use the phrase purposeful work, what comes to mind? And how do people find purposeful work?
Well, I think the idea of purposeful work, it kind of elicits the idea of aligning who you are with what you do, you know? So that alignment is really key to that sense of purpose, because it draws on those aspects of a person's gifts or talents, where they're going to pour their energy and what's going to maximize those things. So any work can be purposeful, right? But not all work is purposeful for me and my wiring, or for you, for anyone, right? So in other words, it's like, purposeful work is not the static list of occupations that are meaningful, and we just have to pick amongst those. I think meaningful work implies that there's a sense of impact that I can uniquely have. What would make it meaningful is defined by both by my deep connection to the work and then that resulting impact that it has for others. And so, you know, when you think about the common good, that's a common phrase that's used when we think about this idea. But I think the common good can be defined, you know, very broadly. I would say it's work that makes a difference for you and for others, you know, and that can take many shapes and many forms. So how do they find purposeful work? Well, that's the age old question, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what everyone wants to know? I think it takes a lot of initiative and dedication to a process. Students are maybe a little more reticent to put in the hard work. I think that goes into that. But once they do, I think they realize how much that pays off. So when I meet with a student to talk about their job search, I let them know they need to be willing to invest creative energy and time. And we talk about this reality that it is a process and it involves a lot of different steps. And so I think one of the key things is this idea of networking, which students really kind of balk at that term because I think they have an assumption that it means they're just working the room, you know, at an event and having to go up and speak to strangers and shake hands. And I say, oh, no, it's really not that. It's building relationships, and that everybody can get on board with. You know, it's nurturing relationships that already exist. It's creating more that are in connection to what you want to do. And I tell them their best source of networking is our alumni group, our alumni for Grace College, because they automatically love you without even knowing you. I was like, they are already in your corner just because of the familial sense of we all went to Grace College and we love helping those who've been a part of our own path. So I tell them to start there because I think it's the safest place to begin. Those are people that they'll have, you know, great advocates for them. Begin having those conversations to learn about those who've already been into those fields that they want to pursue. How did they get into those fields? What advice they might have? They're not asking for a job, but they're asking to build a connection that can help open doors and get that good career advice, you know, helpful insights about the company, job leads, that kind of thing. And then the other piece is, of course, just utilizing resources like our office, but utilizing helpful tools. I think those are important. Handshake is one that we use. I'm sure you're familiar with, but it's, you know, the largest growing platform for recruiters of this demographic. So you've eliminated kind of the middleman, or you've even eliminated those employers who are looking for lots of years of experience because they're looking at, you know, who is actually going to be looking at these postings, and that's these college students. So it's a great place for them to start.
You work at a Christian college. Grace is a Christian college. I know a lot of students at Grace frame the career decision-making process of as one of discerning or discovering their calling. What is unique or powerful about framing career development in terms of a calling as opposed to, you know, career readiness or employability?
Well, so we recently switched to this new book called Redeeming Work, A Guide to Discovering God's Calling for Your Career. Have you heard of that?
Thanks for the plug.
Yeah. No, truly a helpful resource to answer this question. So yeah, helping students read about this idea of calling and engage with it as a topic has been really, really important. We, prior to using your book, we were using Oz Guinness's book, Rising to the Call. And it was also very helpful, similar language and themes as is in your book. But this idea that, you know, calling implies there's a caller that we're responding to. And Guinness kind of describes it as these primary and secondary callings, the primary being we're first called to be in relationship with God as our primary call. And secondary is that response to being in relationship with God. And when we're being shaped by Him and when we learn about Him, it leads us to those places in life where we can live out these new identities. And so I think where it gets confusing for most of us is this idea that calling carries kind of this connotation that, depending on our background, can be a little troubling. I think Christians, we tend to view it as those occupations that align with, you know, ministry or sharing the gospel or sacred work in that sense. And what I love about my job is that I have the privilege of helping students gain, a more accurate understanding of the depth and kind of the breadth of the word calling. I'd say a more accurate definition involves looking at the lens of God's design and how He's beautifully and masterfully made each of us with gifts and talents and strengths and interests. And we get to demonstrate a sense of God's image in all the work that we get to endeavor. And so it's moving towards this idea of calling. It's work that's pursued out of a deep sense of knowing those nuances of our design and then moving towards opportunities to fully engage how we're made. So to me, that's the beautiful shift of thinking of calling as like a privilege to be able to live out of something that's fully us and less about, you know, what does the market say is going to be the best job to walk toward and, you know, where can I find the best pay and those kinds of things. Yeah. So I love like Frederick, I think it's Buchner, his words, the place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness meets the world's deep hunger. It's that idea that somehow we can find great joy when we move out of who we are.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, reframing the whole process to get away from just sort of economic terms and to think in terms of what stirs your spirit, you know, how you're designed. And I love the language you use to describe that. I can see how that is so powerful for your students. I've heard you recently talk about the importance of pivoting during a person's career, but especially during this pandemic. And so pivoting, it's an interesting word. You know, I played basketball growing up, and I think of a basketball player picking up her dribble and making a hard turn on that planted foot. What does pivoting look like in terms of someone's career discernment?
Yeah, I mean, it's a word we're using a lot lately, right? With the pandemic stuff, but it is an important term. I think it's tied, when you think about career discernment, I think it's tied to this idea of self-reflection and having a posture where you're listening to those internal shifts and that growing awareness. I think for many of us, we feel great pressure to have either a career path figured out, you know, especially college students, because they equate, you know, choosing a major with basically choosing the trajectory of the rest of their lives, you know. So they feel this pressure to follow either a career path that they had envisioned all their lives up to that point, or that their parents kind of had instilled that they needed to pursue. So sometimes I think pivoting looks like making a hard turn from those preconceived ideas of what we should pursue or what we believe others think we should pursue. And maybe carrying that planted foot image is like planting our feet on a path of exploration and discovery that may move us away from careers and majors that are more marketable because, or they appeal because of the prestige or whatever, and shifting maybe more toward those things that better align with our gifts and our strengths, because those others don't in fact fit us. So we've got to be willing to kind of let those go and walk toward things that may even sometimes feel more risky because we don't quite see the payoff. I mean, I have a lot of students, you know, they'll come into my office and they want to maybe walk toward a psychology degree. And they're like, well, is there really any money in that? And I'm not sure that's the right question to ask. And it's not that it's an unfair question. Of course, you get a college debt, you want to earn a living. But I always tell them, if you chose a business major because you felt like that's where the money was and you started working in a business and you quickly realize I'm dying here, you're not going to persist anyway.
Right.
So why would you want to do that? You've got to really trust this process that all of those kinds of things are really secondary to being able to thrive in a work environment. So I think pivoting can also be kind of a metaphor for adaptability. You know, mm-hmm. So we need to shift our direction to embrace new opportunities that'll help us grow and better align with who we are. And so we don't need to be afraid of making shifts in directions, especially if the choice is motivated by a desire to kind of better engage our gifts and our strengths and point us toward places where we can move in sync with those things. So, yeah, I think it's that idea of being willing to shift what we've been clinging to as a wrong way of looking at it sometimes toward one that opens up maybe a more freeing path.
Yeah, I love putting those things front and center. And I agree with you. I mean, the financial realities of making a living, those things are valid, practical concerns, but are best kind of put as a secondary concern when you take the long view, right? I mean, you talk to folks who have been at it for a long time in their careers, and I think a lot of the wisdom you'll get from them is putting those kinds of real practical concerns into proper perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm hearing a lot about credentialing and even the term micro-credentialing. What is that exactly? What's micro-credentialing? How will it help me? And what should I do to pursue micro-credentialing opportunities?
Yeah, I think it's defined really as these mini qualifications that demonstrate skills or knowledge or experience kind of in a subject area. And, you know, with this vast array of online learning opportunities that we have to skill up, they would say, kind of add to your toolbox of qualifications so that you can stand out as a more qualified candidate is kind of the angle there. It's the opportunity to distinguish yourself from other candidates by pursuing adding these important skills. And those can be things like, you know, certification in Microsoft Office suite products or digital analytics or, you know, lean manufacturing or project management or, you know, leadership training, whatever it is that based on the industry you're pursuing or maybe even a particular job you're looking for, what would make you an exceptional candidate and maybe help you hit the ground running a little more easily because you've added these kinds of skills to your undergraduate experience. And so we are strongly encouraging students to pursue those things, you know, in addition to their academic path, because it just enhances their employability that much more. It's really important that they look at, you know, nationally recognized resources that have credibility. So don't just go to any online certificate and say, oh, well, then I'll just put that on my resume. It really needs to be recognized with organizations that are reputable and are known for the expertise. And, you know, it's not that you want to spend a lot of money on extra certifications, because many of those resources are free, especially now, even during the pandemic, so much is being offered to help people skill up in light of what we're going through. But yeah, it's a great way to invest time, especially if you're home and you're not working. If you're in a search process, consider it kind of a part-time job where you're going to spend some time and effort towards skill development.
Yeah. And I know, you know, which credentials are most important vary somewhat based on what kind of career path you're wanting to specialize in. But I'm also curious, if you take a step back and look at entering the job market at some future point, say I'm a couple of years away from it still, what kinds of, you know, meta skills should I be trying to develop or cultivate right now that will prepare me for when I'm at that point? in my career.
Yeah. You know, you hear the term hard skills and soft skills, you know, and there's a lot of debate on what employers are really looking for. But I think the majority would say that employers are really concerned about a key list of soft skills. And NACE is one example, the National Association of Colleges and Employers. They've done a lot of research with employers to narrow down what's considered most critical and what employers are looking for. And they include things like oral and written communication skills, professionalism, how you handle yourself in work environments, critical thinking, problem solving, teamwork and collaboration, and leadership skills, and digital technology, being well-versed in those things. And then I think finally, this idea of global and intercultural fluency. How are you able to deal with other cultures? And are you, do you have any exposure that way? And have you given yourself opportunities to be in other contexts to know about some of those things? I think liberal arts colleges pride themselves in helping students develop these kinds of competencies, that whole person development. Employers, I think, you know, are apt to really value those skills, knowing that they can train you on sort of the hard skills that the particular job requires. But it's really difficult to train a new employee on how to appropriately write emails, or, you know, how they present themselves in meetings and things like that. So that's the kind of thing that students really can gain through their college experience. And I think many of those things are honed in those internships. And that's the beauty to me of an internship, is because it's a win-win situation. You're going to be shaped by it. You're going to learn so much from it. Employers ideally get a project taken care of. But those people pour into you, and there's no loss. There's no risk here. They're going to tell you those areas that they think you need to improve on, and they're going to show you ways to do that in a work setting. And that's not going to necessarily happen in a job. If you're really poor in some of those areas, those are the things that kind of either disqualify you up front, or you either get demoted, or you don't, you know, persist in those roles. So taking advantage of those opportunities to learn those soft skills while in college is really, really important.
Great. Thank you. I'd like to kind of wrap up by looking ahead a little bit. You know, one of the things that defines the experience for a lot of people of living during this pandemic is, other than exhaustion, is uncertainty. And just sort of not really having a clear sense of what comes next and what that will look like. What does the future look like from your vantage point? And in particular, if I'm a student, should I feel optimistic about what lies ahead for me within the world of work? And if so, why?
I mean, I tend to be an optimist, which I guess could be annoying to some, but yeah, my disposition is really more optimistic. And I feel like I believe that, because feeling optimistic about what lies ahead has, I think, more to do with my own disposition and posture and less to do with what's out there. Because the reality is, while landing a job can be difficult in our current climate, as many students are facing, we always have the opportunity, as we said earlier, to pivot and move forward. So it might mean that students start out, you know, in jobs that don't fit their major or that feel less rewarding, but making a choice to step out and embrace that path allows you to be shaped by those experiences. And so to me, that's the win in that. So we will be deeply shaped by this chapter of our lives. Everyone will be, especially if we move with this posture of openness to new experiences and a willingness to keep learning along the way. That's, to me, the optimistic lens, is why not embrace what is the present reality and allow it to shape me so that I'm a different person going into hopefully a better, you know, next year or a better job in the future. So yeah, thinking about what can I be doing that would be different than what I expected, and just embracing that and doing things that, you know, they might seem like not college worthy, or they may seem like they are just not what we pictured. But I would say all of us have done that, whether we've been in a pandemic or not. We've had to walk through jobs or turns along the way, but they've shaped us. And that's why, like, as I said in my story earlier, when I look back on my zigzag trajectory, it makes sense. It kind of adds up. All those skills I learned starting out as a bank teller and then going through a temp agency and other things that I've done, those informed what I do now. And, you know, I wouldn't have mapped it out that way, but I'm glad for those experiences. And I think if I had rejected them because they didn't fit what I wanted, I may not have been able to walk, you know, the path that I've been able to walk. So yeah, I'm an optimist.
So much wisdom there. Denise, Terry, thank you so much for joining us for this podcast.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a real joy having you. And thank you also, listeners, for tuning in to this episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U. Jordan Way is the producer of the podcast. To learn more about Pathway U, go to pathwayu.com. And as a thank you for listening to this episode, Pathway U is offering a 20% off coupon code. When you check out, simply enter the code PURPOSEPOD. I'm your host, Brian Dick. We'll see you next time.